Welcome, friends, to the Generations Broadcast. My name is Kevin Swanson. I'm a homeschool father of five, and we're raising our children out here in the eastern plains of Colorado. Have been for the last, well, about 19 years. And we have been broadcasting for 8 years as we try to salvage faith, family, and freedom in the breakdown of the West. And my son Daniel's in studio with me, Dave Buhner also across the table from me. And today we want to talk about education. Believe it or not, the SAT scores have fallen again, as they did the year before, the year before, and the year before, and the year before. But the good news is we're spending three times the amount of money adjusted for inflation per student that we spent some 40 years ago. So 300% increase on money. We're shoveling the money into the systems as fast as we can. And we're also getting as many of our Christian young people from homeschools and Christian schools graduated from the universities and into these schools to teach and to teach and to try to get these kids to be good readers so they can read their godless science books and their godless history books as best as they can. And we're doing everything we can. We're pulling out all stops to try to get a nation to read. And yet SAT reading scores are still at an all-time low in the 2011 SAT results. Dave, this is the lowest of all. The College Board, which released the scores Wednesday, said the results reflect the record size and diversity of the pool of test takers. As I read that, I thought to myself that the same things happen in the homeschool, where you get a wider diversity of people homeschooling over the last 10, 15 years. And there was a comparison study between the Rudner study of 1999 and the Race study of 2008. And as it turns out, after 10 years, with a new study that represents a wider diversity of tests, a wider diversity of those that are taking the tests across the board in American home education movement. And what they've determined is that homeschoolers are doing even better than they were in 1999. So, Dave, I think that's an interesting contrast. I mean, here you have a more diverse group taking the SAT after 10 years or 15 years or 20 years, and they're doing far worse than they were 20 years ago. Well, you look at the homeschooling results from the Rudner study and the Race study, and you find that the Race study indicates that homeschoolers are doing some 5 to 6 percentile points higher than they were in 1999. Dave, that's just mind-blowing to me. It's amazing. I think that God is blessing in a very special way the home education movement in America. It reminds me what the Commissioner of Education used to tell me here in Colorado when I was first executive director of CHECK. I'd run down to his office as the Commissioner of Public Education in the state of Colorado. I'd run down to his office a couple times. He told me that homeschooling is the brightest light in this nation's future. And he came to our conference. He told me the same thing. It's the brightest light. You know, it's brightest light. He said, the future of education is not brick and mortar. That's one thing he told me. He reminded me. Future of education is not brick and mortar. But what you guys are doing is progressive. It's on the edge. Of course, he's a conservative in this regard. And he said homeschooling is the brightest light academically. Now, as you know, Dave, we're going to get on to other things because we think academics is of secondary importance to other things like faith and character. And we're going to get into that in just a moment. But enough to say that homeschooling is doing very, very well. Thank you very much. And any social reformer out there that's pounding and pounding and pounding on public schools and all those Christians running into public schools to try to save the nation and try to save academics. And Dave, I know a lot of young men and young women who've done that. They think they can salvage education in America by getting involved. They're on a sinking ship. This is the Titanic, Dave. It's going down, 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 and they're going to have to get behind a better methodology. They're going to have to get a revolutionary, a Copernican revolution involved in the area of education, and I believe that that involves a huge amount of focus on character, focus on faith, involvement of God in the educational program, and of course, the development of close-knit relationships between the mentor, the discipler, and the disciple. So again, my book, Upgrade the 10 Secrets to the Best Education for Your Child, brings out some of these very important principles, but they're largely ignored in the large institutionalized program, state-funded mess that we call the public schools.
Of course, Kevin, there is another view of why the SAT scores are showing worse results, and that is the SATs have not been flexible. They haven't adapted to the new breed of students. They're not culturally diverse, and we have a culturally diverse group of people. So when you ask questions like how many bushels of corn could you get out of a field, most of these kids have no experience with working, like taking bushels out of the field. If they would ask culturally relevant questions to them, like how many hours must you stand in line in the DMV, they would do much better. And so instead of the test reflecting how well the children are doing, it could be that the children are reflecting how well the test makers are doing.
Well, the fact of the matter is they're not reading as well as they did. In fact, I taught in public and private schools, Dave, high school. And I tell you what, the reading skills of the average student, and this would have been the 1980s, late 80s, early 90s, the ability of the average student to read, I mean, we're talking about a 14, 15, 16-year-old kid, the ability to read was dismal. I mean, reading skills are in the toilet in this country. And that's one reason why you have SAT scores dropping like a rock.
But
and
video another, game another, skills are up.
Yeah. But not, another problem is you do have a lot of bilingual families. And that's an issue as well. I mean, our nation is seeing a birth implosion. We're seeing a breakdown of a republic because of birth implosions. And you don't have a generational continuity from generation to generation. Instead, you have a degradation of culture. You have a birth implosions going on among those who have lived here for a long time and become fat little existentialistic materialists over these years. And then you've got the immigrants coming in, and many of them don't know the language. And yet, you know, our nation is going to be, I think, increasingly dependent upon these immigrants to survive.
Well, I can see where cultural immigration has affected test scores as a whole, but you look at any segment of the population, virtually any segment of the population, you will see that test scores continue to fall. And I think that's because of a whole philosophy of education that's based on people like Dewey, who are really not in the business of transferring wisdom.
No. They're into propaganda. It's a worldview.
Well, they're equipping little cogs of the state machinery. And that's why they're government schools. The government schools are to create the necessary ingredients for a government-controlled society. See, the Bible in the book of Proverbs talks about what education is. Education is honoring the father and the mother who are bringing the lessons. That education is rooted in the traditions and the wisdom that's been accumulated through generations. In the new modern state education, you question those fathers.
Yes,
you don't
yes.
spend time studying. Yes, you say yes, everything that's wrong yes, with the yes. framers
you don't
of this
build
country.
On the past.
No, you criticize
just revolt
them.
Revolt against the past. Right, right.
And that's modern education.
And the same thing happens in culture. The same thing happens in economics. The same thing happens in politics. And eventually, you break down civilization in that way. As it turns out, the fifth commandment is important. Things will not go well with you in the land if you don't respect your fathers and your grandfathers. And we have the generational trajectory. As you know, Pew Research does their research and has since the 1970s taken a look at the political and social views of the great generation, the silent generation, the baby boom generation, the Generation Xers, the millennials, et cetera, et cetera. What they find is, of course, the millennials are far, far more liberal than the Generation Xers and far, far, far more liberal than the baby booms and far, 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 far more liberal than the great generation. And these generational approaches, the great generation doesn't really change their views over 20, 30, 40 years. They have the same views on things like homosexuality, evolution, and socialism. But with each successive generation, you flip up to a far more enthusiastic support for things like socialism, homosexuality, and evolution. Why? Because of the educational systems. Why? Because we've centralized power and we have controlled education through the public schools. And 90% of the kids in this country, including 90% of the Christian kids in this country, go to these schools and become increasingly more supportive of homosexuality, evolution, and socialism over the years. And that's why you're going to wind up with a far, far more liberalized society over the years. Why? Because once you centralize control over an educational system, then you get the ACLU to fight all the battles for you so that if you finally do get a Christian into a position to teach and he says, God bless you, after somebody sneezes, he gets yanked into court for that. And then he gets really happy because he communicated a biblical worldview for 0.2 seconds instead of recognizing the fact that just about every square inch of material being taught in these public schools by Christian teachers continually approve of this pro-atheistic, pro-agnostic, pro-leave God out of it, don't fear God in history, don't fear God in science sort of a philosophy that's being taught in our public schools today. Dave, I tell you what, this generational trajectory is nasty, and it is being set by the public schools. And I'd say this is the battle today. We've got to get education out of the hands of the centrists and those that fund the education and fund these teachers in very, very powerful positions and dictate what will happen in terms of the worldview of those kids inculcated in public schools across the fruited plains of America.
Kevin, the book of Proverbs says the beginning of knowledge is the fear of the Lord. Now, I'm going to contrast this with a school in Idaho, Napa Classical Academy. It's a charter school. It was a charter school. It was shut down by the Idaho Board of Education. You want to know why?
Why?
They used religious texts inside the classroom.
Happens all the time.
They used the Bible.
Happens all the time.
They closed down this charter school.
Shut them down.
They shut it down.
Absolutely, because they got into the fear of God as the beginning of science. And they didn't want that. They didn't want that in the classroom. And they are just fine if you have a little prayer service over on the side, over by the pole or something. Or you have a little Bible time in your house for 10 minutes before the kids go off to school. But when it comes to real life, God will not be in the science classes. God will not be in the history classes. God will not be in politics. God will not be in business, and he will not be in our banking system. God's not going to be involved in any real sense in any aspect of life but for our tiny little worship centers that happen on a Sunday. Well, friends, that kind of dualism is unacceptable when it comes to the Christian life, because as it turns out, God's book on education is the book of Proverbs. It is the book of Proverbs. That's God's book on how to convey knowledge, wisdom, and understanding to a young man or a young woman. And we got to begin with a fear of God as the beginning of wisdom and knowledge. In just a moment, we're going to talk a little bit more about that. And we're going to talk about how Proverbs can be reinstituting a wonderful educational approach as we prepare our children for some of the more difficult days ahead. If they're going to rebuild their social economic systems and their political systems and their churches and their relationships in family and church and community in the years to come, they're going to need to know the book of Proverbs inside and out. Be back in just a moment.
I have always felt that doubt was the beginning of wisdom, and the fear of God was the end of wisdom.
Clarence Darrow.
The only true wisdom is knowing that you know nothing.
Socrates.
Belief is the death of intelligence.
Robert Anton Wilson.
If thou trusteth to the book called the Scriptures, thou trusteth to the rotten staff of fables and falsehood.
Thomas Paine.
Faith is believing what you know ain't so.
Mark Twain.
Whoever trusts in his own mind is a fool, but he who walks in wisdom will be delivered.
God.
The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and knowledge of the Holy One is insight.
God.
The fool believes his own ideas to be wisdom, but those who fear God and search for understanding find true wisdom. To lead your family in the pursuit of godliness, pick up a copy of the Proverbs Study Guide at generationswithvision.com.
We're back on the Generations broadcast, friends. An Idaho classical school shut down. Why? Because they used the fear of God as the beginning of wisdom in science classrooms, and that was unacceptable by the Idaho state government. Dave, and you mentioned something about the Idaho Constitution, and they're one of the most conservative states. It's not the most conservative state in America. I mean, this is if you want to get to the very best state in America, it's Idaho. They're shutting down classical schools there. Why? Because they're teaching the beginning of wisdom is the fear of God.
Well, I wish they were teaching the beginning of wisdom was the fear of God. They were actually just using the Bible as and it's a comparative text. So you can't even get the Bible in. Let alone the fear of God. Actually, Idaho may be a very conservative state, but they have very liberal view. And I don't mean freedom. I mean a liberal's
just
view.
Say wicked. How about wicked?
Wicked, evil. Evil view, the view of separation of church and state. Title IX of their constitution reads, "No sectarian or religious tenets or doctrines shall ever be taught in the public schools," which means that they really cannot teach anything.
Right. This is the way it goes. Okay, there it is. Did you get that? That was it, friends. That's teaching no sectarianism and no worldview and no basic presuppositional framework on anything. Okay, I just did it. It was dead air for 5 seconds. Okay, that's what they're doing in Idaho schools. Now, actually, Dave, you know what they're doing. They're cloaking their real agenda, and that is they believe in polytheism and statism. That is, the government is the savior, and the government is in control of all things, and the government will dictate all things. The government's the source of law, et cetera, et cetera. That's their ultimate and polytheism. They open the gates up to all gods, and they're supposed to respect all gods equally in these public school classrooms.
But by doing that, what they're really trying to say is there is no God, or there are all gods are legitimate, yeah, except for the one God who claims to be exclusive. What we really ought to say instead of wicked is these are anti-Christ institutions.
Yes.
These are against, opposed to.
It's impossible to be neutral. And Dave, as you go to God's book on education, as you mentioned, Proverbs, okay? God's book on inculcating knowledge, wisdom, and understanding to a young man. You get six verses introduction, and the sixth verse says, oh, by the way, this is a book for those of you who want to know how to inculcate knowledge, wisdom, and understanding to a young man or a young woman. Okay, so you get six introductory verses, and then the verse 7 in chapter 1 is the beginning of wisdom is the fear of God. So immediately, Dave, you call for an exclusive fear of the one and only true and living God. You got to start with that. If you don't start with that, you don't have a Christian education. And if you're giving your children an education that is not rooted in the fear of God, if their science, if their history, if their music is not rooted in the fear of God, you're teaching them not to fear God. You're teaching them that God is not important in the science classroom. God is not to be worshipped in the history classroom. And Dave, I again repudiate that kind of thing. If the book of Proverbs is God's book on education, Dave, I think it ought to be taught in all the teaching colleges across America. Of course, what would happen is that would make those teaching colleges irrelevant, and they would never do that. My guess is Christian teaching colleges do not teach the book of Proverbs. They stay away from the book of Proverbs. They don't have their prospective teachers learning the book of Proverbs. Why? Because it's not important to them. Because God is stupid as far as they're concerned. Christian colleges who won't teach the book of Proverbs as God's basic system of education and content methodology think that God doesn't know anything about education and he's to be ignored when it comes to his book on education. Either that or they think, hey, it's a book that's good for Sunday, but we're not going to integrate it into real life. We're not going to integrate it into politics, into human relationships, into science, into history, into et cetera, all the epistemology, metaphysics, and ethics, all the things that are actually treated in the book of Proverbs. Dave, I mean, it just seems crazy to me that the book of Proverbs has been so ignored by the professional education system. I'm talking Christian schools, classical schools, and public schools in America.
Well, Kevin, I would suggest this. If you're not teaching the beginning of knowledge is the fear of the Lord, you're teaching children not to fear the Lord. In fact, you're telling them not to have a Lord, because the only way that the Lord is the Lord, that is the King, is the sovereign of the universe, is if he's fearful. He's got to be fearful in his holiness and fearful in his law that we break constantly. If you don't begin with that, you're actually teaching children that that isn't true. And I caution parents and I caution teachers, if you're stumbling the little ones by not teaching the fear of God, you just better go tie a millstone around your neck and drop yourself in the lake, because it'd be better for you than to keep doing what you're doing.
Well, folks, we're talking about giving your children a good, solid education, and I suggest you begin with the book of Proverbs. That's why I put together an 800-page curriculum on the book of Proverbs, which I believe to be the core curriculum in the teaching of children. God expects you to use his books. And his book on education is the book of Proverbs. His book on worship is the book of Psalms. His book on sexuality and intimacy is the Song of Solomon. His book on law is Exodus and Deuteronomy. His book on the Gospels are Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. Give your children these books. But the book specifically for the education of a child is the book of Proverbs and its basic stuff. And Dave, you know, it talks about all sorts of things. You get into the book of Proverbs and you find that the book of Proverbs deals with things like the rebel, the fool, the scoffer. In fact, as we teach the book of Proverbs to our children, we talk right away about the scoffer. It's mentioned about 50, 60 times throughout the book. And we define it right away in terms of a biblical approach to illustrations, we define it right away in terms of a modern illustrative device that our children can understand. The scoffer is a teenage rebel. The scoffer is 90% of teenagers that come out of your average Christian home today. I mean, they push back on their parents. They're not interested in hearing their mother's advice. They roll their eyes when their father tries to tell them to be back by 9 o'clock. The average teenager in the average Christian home is a scoffer. And Dave, it's interesting. After 50 times of going over this, as this teenage rebel doesn't listen to advice, this teenage rebel is not easily rebuked, this teenage rebel leaves exhortations to the side and does his own thing. Teenage rebel can't be taught anything, can't be corrected, etc. We go over this again and again. again and again and again after maybe 5,000 times of referring to the teenage rebel from the time that our children are 6, 7, 8 years old as we go through the Proverbs, you know what happens, Dave, in our children's minds? They come to the conclusion they don't want to be a teenage rebel when they hit 12, 13 years of age. It's amazing. As you inculcate these principles and they're repeated again and again in the book of Proverbs, you begin to work these into the fiber of their being. And I think that's important.
Right. The ninth chapter of the book of Proverbs tells us to tell our children to forsake foolishness and to live and go in the way of understanding. And it tells parents something very important. He who corrects a scoffer gets shame for himself. And a lot of parents will understand what this means. When you have a scoffing teenager and you tell them they shouldn't do something, they roll their eyes and they make a mocking statement. And yet it also tells us that he who corrects a scoffer not only gets shame for himself, but he who corrects a wise man. The wise man will love you for the correction. Yeah. And it's a very good help for parents to be able to talk to your children and acknowledge and see exactly where they are. Are they struggling with this pride that's scoffing, or are they grasping wisdom? And this is just one of the myriad of lessons that the book of Proverbs gets us. And this one about the scoffer is a very important lesson. And I think the Bible works itself like a mirror. We look into it and we see whether or not we're this kind of scoffer. Are we correctable? Do we lash out at those who would give us wisdom?
Dave, it's amazing how many Proverbs apply to everything we're doing within the home when we recognize that our children are pushing back on their algebra and they're not really getting into it and they're sort of slothful in this area. You come to them, you say, well, what's going on? They say, well, it's too hard. I can't do it, Dad. It's just more difficult than I could even imagine. And I don't like this math anymore. And you come to your son, you say, son, it sounds to me like there's a lion in the road. And it's preventing you from going out there and getting your work done. Well, that's the way life is, son. You get into difficult technical challenges as you try to do your computer programs for your business, or you get into some real difficult personal challenges as you sell a product, or as you try to work through conflicts in a market, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Son, there's these lions in the road all the time. Let me show you what to do with the lion in the road. And you just tell your son, you take a 45, you put it to the head of the lion, you shoot that lion, and you get out there and you plow some fields. In other words, you give him a real can-do attitude, and you don't do the problem for him. You apply that proverb to that son's life, and you say, son, that algebra issue, that factoring trinomials is a challenge. There's a lot of difficulty in factoring trinomials, and you're going to have to do some work here as you work through the methodology of factoring trinomials. You're going to have to overcome the lion in the road in order to get on with this math course. And David, you can see how the book of Proverbs really brings character to bear in just about everything that you do. And that's why it's important. It's fundamental in the education of our children. Again, we're not avoiding math. We're not avoiding some of these other subjects. But we are saying that the core curriculum is the book of Proverbs. Proverbs 14 and verse 1 talks about nations. Proverbs 14 verse 1 talks about how the foolish wife tears down her home. Proverbs 14, 28 talks about how nations can be torn down, how nations fall. I mean, you have some verses that deal with personal relationships, some verses that deal with how to ruin an entire nation. And Dave, you have an amazing amount of wisdom here. You find out that getting rich quick schemes are lousy. And one of the reasons why we have a debt-driven society today is because the hearts of people are opposed to what is written in the book of Proverbs, and the 4 to 5 reminders throughout the book of Proverbs not to get involved in get-rich-quick schemes, to be very careful to take on more of the tortoise approach than the hare approach in your economic endeavors. And as you're teaching those things, as you're working those things into hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people within a nation, you're going to find that nation is not going to want to go into debt because they don't need to get rich quick. They don't need to go into hundreds of thousands and millions of dollars of debt in order to increase their net worth overnight, but they can just go slow and steady wins the race. I had somebody ask me about business debt. You know, he's so excited about business debt. He says, it's got to be an exception for business debt. Well, one of the reasons why people use so much business debt is in order to get rich quick. They can't imagine saving their extra profit every year and eventually over 2 to 3 or 5 or 6 extra years finally buy an extra 200 acres or an extra 50 acres for their their farm and add that on. No, they want to go into debt to get it. And business debt is a very, very tempting sort of thing. But the Proverbs is radical in opposing business debt. The Proverbs is radical in opposing things like partnerships and striking hands with even friends, let alone strangers. And it's opposed to, I think, things like corporations. And it explains why nations fall. Birth implosions. For lack of people, a nation will fall or a city will fall, we read in one of the Proverbs. The book of Proverbs will explain everything that's going on, especially in the present day, Dave. And as we see dysfunctional families, dysfunctional economic systems, dysfunctional nations, I'll tell you what, the book of Proverbs is going to be the way that our children will rebuild these systems in the years to come. If they don't understand these principles, then they're not going to understand what is happening around them, where 42% of kids are born without fathers, up from 6% in 1970, and our economic systems are so debt-laden, they're going to come crashing down by the year 2035, and we're going to have to rebuild these systems on economic principles, business principles, banking principles, political principles, individual relationship principles found in the book of Proverbs. Give your children the book of Proverbs. There's never been a more important time to give these lessons to your kids.
Kevin, the book of Proverbs has so many lessons about economics. The ones about personal economics are so apropos in the education of your child. Two verses from Proverbs 13. There is one who makes himself rich, yet has nothing, and one who makes himself poor, yet has great riches.
It's beautiful.
Now, this is a lesson that we need to teach our children. I'd like to teach it to our civil magistrates as well. But it says that there's something beyond having a lot of things that makes one rich. Relationships, for instance, a relationship with God and peace. The other verse that I think is so important is wealth gained by dishonesty will be diminished. Mm-hmm. But he who gathers by labor will increase. And so many people are looking for passive income. They're looking for income without work. And the Proverbs are saying, look, that's a dishonest labor. I mean, even if you're upfront with it, that's a dishonest kind of labor. He who gathers by the labor, his wealth will increase. He who works and does the labor is going to get the benefit. And these are lessons that are lost in our culture because we want to collect Social Security and get paid for doing nothing.
They're radical, and they reshift the way we look at work, economics, politics, and history, Dave. The Proverbs teach us to take a long-term perspective to things. They talk about how sometimes you have people that will kowtow to the wicked, Proverbs 24, verses 24 and 25. You have compromising churches in the time of Nazi Germany or in times of the Romanian communist invasion where these compromising churches were compromising all the time. They were kowtowing to the tyrants constantly. And what it says is that these compromising churches are going to be despised in the future, in 150 years later, 200 years later. As today, Dave, we look back at those compromising Lutheran churches in the 1930s and 1940s with the Nazi government. We say, why did these compromising Lutheran churches kowtow so quickly? And why do these ELCA churches kowtow so quickly to the abortionists in Wichita, Kansas? Why do they kowtow to the wickedness, which is not perceived as wickedness in the present age, but will be perceived as wickedness later on when we look back years later and we see that there were men like Richard Wurmbrand that stood up against 1,000 other pastors and all the communist leaders and spoke against Stalin in that Romanian congregation of churches that came together to give Stalin and the communist government all the praise and the worship. And Richard Wurmbrand got up there and he bravely took a stand against all these thousands and thousands. And of course, he paid the price for it. But now, looking back, Dave, looking back, that Ceausescu, that evil Ceausescu and that evil Stalin, they're dead. They're gone. They're the monsters of history. And Richard Wurmbrand, I believe, is a true, true hero. And by the way, the book Tortured for Christ has some 15 million copies out there. And I think Richard Wurmbrand will be a hero, not just temporally, not just in human history, but also in eternity, because he stood alone against massive wickedness. And Dave, I use that illustration in my book for Proverbs 24, 24 and 25. And it was such a powerful proverb. As we bring these modern illustrations to bear, you see how powerful the lessons become to us. We begin to read history. We begin to read the events of our lives in terms of the principles of Proverbs. And they take on just a whole new light. We begin to see the wisdom of God here, Dave.
we do see the wisdom of God, and that's what the book of Proverbs is. It's about the wisdom of God. And it gives us life lessons about economics, about history, about our own desires. Here's another gem, an absolute gem from chapter 18. A man who isolates himself seeks his own desires. He rages against all wise judgment. That's why we don't let our children play in their rooms and their computer games all by themselves in long periods of time. They're seeking their own desires. They're raging. They're actually angry against all wise judgment. This is a beautiful verse that explains why relationships are a necessary part of child rearing. It's why in my family, the girls have one room. I'm fortunate I have two daughters, and so they share a room. They're not isolated. My sons, all three of them, are in one room, and I know of some families where there's eight daughters in one room. Nobody gets to be isolated. Nobody gets long periods of time alone. I mean, certainly, you know, when you're doing your business in the bathroom, the door's closed and so forth. But isolation rages against all wise judgment. Yes. And we see this applied in so many different ways, yes. Kevin, from people who isolate themselves from brothers and sisters in the church to children growing up who are playing long periods of time by themselves. And sometimes as parents, we actually like that, because it allows us to isolate ourselves from raising children. If little Johnny's over there playing by himself, I don't have to have this relationship with him right now. The book of Proverbs tells us that we're eschewing wisdom.
You know, I tell you what, Dave, it is amazing to me as I work through the book of Proverbs with my 800 pages of study guide and finding out how many times we've ignored the book of Proverbs in how we've done just about every part of life over the last 100 years. I mean, it's amazing. I was overwhelmed. Oh, we've ignored that one. Oh, we ignored that. Oh, we ignored that one too. Oh, we ignored that one too. As you go through the book of Proverbs, you find that our modern social systems, our modern political systems have just about ignored every one of the Proverbs found in this wise book. Now, I'm betting on the fact that God knew what he was talking about when he gave the wisdom to Solomon and he conveyed it to us in the book of Proverbs. I'm betting on the fact that God knows something about every part of life. And if we want to rebuild our systems, we're going to rebuild it by faith on the word of God and the principles found in the book of Proverbs. My encouragement to you is that you use the methodology, the educational methodology found in the book of Proverbs, as well as the content. Use both. Use the relational method that you find in Proverbs chapter 24, where the father cries out to his son, "My son, come close to me, observe my ways. My son, give me your heart." And there's a lot of emotional tone. There's a lot of emotional crying out and pleading with a son. "My son, don't go the way to the harlot. My son, don't go the way to hell. My son, listen to my words. My son, tie my principles around your neck. I mean, embrace the law of your mother." It's very emotional because it's a mother, it's a father discipling their children as they walk by the way, as they rise up, and as they lie down. Well, friends, use this book. And again, use the questions to spark application in your own family's lives. That's why I put so many questions. I have thousands and thousands of questions on the book of Proverbs throughout. And I, again, have questions for every single verse. I have lessons on every single verse in the book of Proverbs. I've taken the book of Proverbs really seriously, assuming that God knew what he was talking about when he presented it. But use the questions. Use the question to drive application, because remember, you're not going to really, really inculcate the book of Proverbs until your children live it out in terms of application. And of course, they'll never retain the lessons unless they're doers of the word. They'll never retain the lessons unless they actually apply the word in their own lives. Well, ladies and gentlemen, these books are available at kevinswanson.com. Again, we have the Family Bible Study series in the book of Proverbs complete. The third volume is finally complete. It took me 2.5 years of work to do this. It's the longest project I've ever engaged on in my life. And I would encourage you to get a hold of these books at my website, kevinswanson.com. Also, if you'd like to make them available for your churches and you need a special price, just let us know. Just contact us at host@kevinswanson.com, and we'll do the best we can to get you the best price possible so you can make these resources available to families everywhere. Already there are thousands of families who have enjoyed these study guides, and I'm expecting this to go to tens of thousands in the months to come. So if you would like to get a copy, just go to kevinswanson.com and purchase your series on the book of Proverbs today. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation. We'll